Hey, Steel, how you doing?
Dave, man, I'm doing terrific. Happy February. Happy Lovers Week.
Did you do anything for Valentine's Day?
You know, Cedar and I were homesick from school and work. I gave my son some fever medicine, and we watched Angry Birds, the movie.
Excellent.
We went to the library, and then we played some soccer indoors.
Yeah, I totally, if you're having a fever, I'd recommend going into public libraries and just get out there.
I said, Cedar, you can put every single one of those trains in your mouth if you want. If they fit, that's where they belong. So,
Ed, did you encourage him to lick the spines of the various books that he came across?
Dave, I don't need to encourage him, man. This kid's already trained. We've been in the library before. He knows how to do it. Yes, 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 no. And he just licks them all just for good measure. I say, Cedar, we look with our tongues, not with our eyes. That's what I always tell him.
So, Steele, we went to a restaurant, the whole crew.
Whoa.
Last night. Yeah, the whole crew.
Did you guys have to have your own room, or did they seat you at a normal table?
We're not going to a restaurant where people are being seated. Come on, Steele.
So you drove through Wendy's?
Culver's? Are you familiar with Culver's?
Dave, Culver's is from Wisconsin. It was started here in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
I've met Craig Culver, Dave.
Oh, Craig. I didn't even know.
Yeah. This guy's awesome. This is – they're legendary. The Butterburger, Dave?
Yeah, that's what I ate. I ate a Butterburger.
Did you have their I don't remember what they call the thing where they mix in the – it's like frozen custard mixed in with toppings. It's like the Dairy Queen Blizzard, but they have their own version of it. It's like the cement mixer or something.
No, they had a deal because it was Valentine's Day. Banana splits for $2.
Whoa, that's a little phallic. Is that why the banana splits? It's kind of pervy.
Yeah, there's pictures of bananas all over the restaurant.
Are you serious?
I'm serious about the deal. I didn't even – Steele, when you're going to a restaurant with your five small children, you don't connect the dots on phallic symbols. That's the last thing I'm considering.
It's pretty taboo. The biggest consideration is, can we all eat here for under $20? If so, this is the greatest restaurant I've ever been to.
We did. I think the bill came to about 17. We shared two banana splits, and it's kind of a high alert situation the whole time. I'm standing up, holding a baby with a spoon and like coaching everybody. It's good. Yeah.
Culver's, man. Family friendly restaurant. I'm glad you like, if you guys come to visit us in Wisconsin, we'll take you to the original Culver's.
Oh man.
Yeah. Sauk City, Wisconsin.
We love a good custard. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
So Steele, we were driving the other day and there was this water truck in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this was a thing, but people like to make their water alkaline. Are you familiar with this?
No. Rather than basic? Or is alkaline basic? Alkaline's basic.
Alkaline, it's acidic. It's basic.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you don't want it acidic. You want it basic. You want a pH greater than 7, I believe. Is that? Yeah, that's how it works. But on the back of the truck, it said, here's what it said, and I wanted you to fill in a blank, but it said, change your water, change your life. So...
Well, yeah. What was the blank?
So let's just say water still. What would come to, what's your first thing that comes to your mind? Change your blank, change your life.
Attitude. That's my first thought.
Diaper. Way to
go. I don't know.
Change your, my first thought was haircut.
Oh, yeah.
Gender. Yeah. Gender is going to, that's going to be a big difference.
Yeah.
I wanted you to fill in the blank. That's all I wanted still.
Just the one?
Yeah. That's all I got.
Nice,
just
I love
blank.
It.
Yeah, all right,
that's the episode. Let's wrap it.
Yeah. Anybody out there wants to fill in the blank, let us know what you put in there.
Change your blank. Change your life.
Yeah.
So good. Was it a Culligan's truck? Was it Culligan's?
I have no idea what it was, but it's really made me think a lot about my life and about my water. I only drink alkaline water now.
I'm pretty sure that's the name of Howard's next book.
Change your blank, change your life?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many things you can change. Steele, you know what? We actually have an entire show we're going to do tonight.
I cannot wait, Dave. It's been so long that people have been I can't tell you the volume of fan mail we received. In these dark times, they thought we went underground, Dave, but we didn't.
No, there's still positive things happening. 2017 is going to be a good year for certain people, us included, you and me. And we got some good things. We got some old segments. We're bringing back Small Talk, Everyday Heroes. Of course, we're going to talk music. You've got some book wisdom for us, but first,
yeah,
we're going to induct something into the Off the Chain Hall of Fame.
Wow. Dave, this does not happen every episode.
It's only when something strikes our hearts and we really feel it. This isn't, you can't just get into the Off the Chain Hall of Fame because you're in one good movie. You have to be in at least 2 to 3 good movies.
And there's a lawyer. We have a lawyer in our Hall of Fame. Who else? I'm trying to remember who else is in our Hall of Fame.
I know Paul Walker and Lawyer Mike are in the Hall of Fame. I think we have some like real Hall of Famers though.
Yeah, I tried to make it real, but then you keep putting bozos in. Now, Lawyer Mike was my doing, so I'm proud of that one.
That's offensive for you to say that about Paul Walker, but still, I think of all the inductions we've done, this is the one that is probably most genuinely close to my heart, and I know it's close to your heart.
And my spleen.
Yeah, that's right where it's lodged, in between the two of them, right where your left lung should be. But still, you know where I was tonight with my whole family?
Not Culver's, apparently.
No, that was last night.
Oh, okay.
The library.
Oh, Dave, best family decision you could have made. Public libraries are, I think of them as the last bastion of pure idealism in the United States.
I love them. When we moved, we've only been in this city for a couple weeks. My number one priority, obviously not for real, but I did it within the first few days we were here. I got a library card.
You gotta have lending privileges. For the library. You've gotta have lending privileges.
Yeah, you're so limited otherwise. I didn't want to be boxed into a hole. So obviously that's what we're inducting him to the Hall of Fame, the public library.
Not a minute too soon. Public libraries, Dave, are a dream. When I was a teenager, I wanted to, I think I may have told this on the podcast, but I wanted to be a vagrant who lived in the library, and I was going to write these world, like, genius poems by hand in pencil in the margins or blank pages of really high quality library books. So I wouldn't just, I'd pick like a book that only an awesome person would want to read. So not a famous book, but like a really good book. And then I would write my incredible poems in there. So they'd be one of a kind, and only people who had good taste in books would find my poems. That was what I was going to do when I grew up. And I'm almost there. I got a 5-year plan, Dave.
Well, you do have a master's degree in, is it librarian studies? What is the official title?
Library and information studies.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, you don't want to leave out information.
No, but you know, they've just renamed the school. It's now the iSchool, the information school.
So are they moving away from libraries? Because that's disconcerting.
No, they just have to brand it as I stuff because of Apple, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. But still, but you're talking about poetry in the middle of the book reminds me of when we were living in that house next to the Provo Library.
Oh, yeah.
I'd go there pretty frequently, get James Bond movies to watch, but I also get books.
But I'd also get books.
I still remember a haunting book. I don't know if Tim O'Brien, are you familiar with that author?
Yeah. I've never read any of his books, okay. But I know that he's written good ones.
Yeah, he's written some great ones. And this one was called, I think it's Lake in the Woods. I don't remember, but it's kind of a disturbing kind of murder mystery kind of book. And as I'm reading this book, I get about 2/3 of the way through and I open it up and there's a handwritten letter in there. And the letter, I read it and it's a somewhat disturbing confession of love that seems a little bit unhinged, like the person writing this is not entirely stable. And I finished the book and I felt like that letter had really added something to what I was reading. So I just left it in there.
And then Matt was like, "Hey, have you seen my letter?" <For Janina. laughs> You know, actually, Dave, that Provo Library was the location where I first met Emmeline Gardner. Spencer and Emmeline's second date, I went to a Bell concert there at that library, like around Christmas. And I saw these two cute, tall, skinny, gangly people with the same haircut, and I knew it was a match made in heaven.
As soon as I saw their matching haircuts, I was so excited.
They were like holding gloves. They had these little fingerless gloves and they were holding hands or something. I was like, I can't. I just can't.
Steele, I got a few bullet points about libraries.
As you should.
Because I know it's important to collect your information in an organized way. The library taught me that.
Yeah.
But one thing I love about the library is it brings all people together.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that people from across political spectrums, income levels, almost everybody universally appreciates the public library.
Yeah.
Because it serves everyone.
The only person that's going to say negative things about a public library is just a terrible human being.
Yeah.
There's always a homeless guy there.
Absolutely.
And I don't begrudge him that at all. It's the library. You're welcome here.
Especially since they got computers with free internet access.
How else are you going to check your email if you have no home? You got to do it there.
Yeah.
But I genuinely love that about the library. It's a place where people can access stuff of all walks of life that otherwise they might not be able to.
And I think that the idea of a lending library, I think it's just the best idea that our society has had for a long time. They're like, okay, here's the deal. As a community, we're just going to buy a couple of copies of everything that exists, especially the interesting stuff. And here's the second part of the deal. Since we bought it, we're just going to ask you for your name, and then you can borrow it for a month or two. You don't have to pay us anything. Just borrow it and enjoy it. And when you're done, bring it back and we'll let someone else borrow it. How unusual is that? Like, it's so sad that that's an unusual arrangement in our world. But it's unusual, but it's like, it's a simple idea, but it's the best idea. It's such a good idea.
It's so neat, but because you're familiar with it, it doesn't seem that bizarre, but there's no other place in life where that's true. You want to go to the video store, you're paying. Well, there's not really video stores that exist anymore, but you're paying to borrow those things. Most oftentimes you have to rent to borrow something. You can't just go and be like, I need to use this moving truck. And everybody's like, cool with it. You have to pay money.
And the library's always like, no, did you find everything you wanted? Are you sure you don't want more? There's no charge, but would you like more?
And yeah, I guess the nature of people that get involved with libraries that want to be there, I think have an interesting attitude that's really supportive.
Totally.
You don't, I mean, there's of course the cartoon of the angry librarian that wants you to be quiet all the time. But in real life, mostly when I interact with a librarian, they just are falling all over themselves to help me.
Yeah. So the coolest thing I think about librarian school and librarianship that was really different from, so my background was originally English literature, which is like literature with a capital L. And it's like, these are the great books and everybody else are a bunch of unwashed slobs. The library school could be more different. They're like, no, our job is to give people what they want. We don't judge their taste. We just provide books which satisfy it. And so like the library is a place where everybody was like totally cool with genre fiction. They're totally cool with young adult novels. They're totally cool with like, oh, people like it? Fine. We're not going to judge them. We're just going to provide stuff that people like. And it's not only like we're just going to give you trash. It's not cable TV exclusively. But they exist to provide people with what they want with like no ulterior motive really. They'll take your name down so that you can return the item, but they don't keep any long-term record of what you've checked out, Dave. And they'll, if the government comes to them and says, I want to know what Dave checked out a year ago, librarians would refuse to give it to them even if they had the record. That's how cool they are. They're like, no, your privacy matters more than any of that.
It's such a neat concept, and it's really – it's for the enjoyment of society, and I think it's for the betterment of society. I mean, libraries – another bullet point that I put down is education. they're very big on education. Libraries provide places where you can have community classes. Different people can come in and speak and teach things. And libraries, knowledge is stored in books and now on the internet, and they give people ways to access both.
Yeah. And the other great thing about it too is that they're usually nice, attractive spaces, but they're almost exclusively non-commercial spaces.
Yeah.
It feels so refreshing. And you've got like all of these books of such varying different quality and topics just sitting next to each other on shelves. It's like an enormously tolerant place, I feel like.
Yeah, very inclusive. Like we already talked about how all people can come together there. Yeah. Everybody's happy at the library.
There is something for everyone. There really is. And Dave, I'd be remiss. I need to mention this too. This is like a little known nerd point, but I want to talk about it. The reason why the libraries are able to exist is actually because of this proviso of law that's related to copyright law. It's called the first sale doctrine. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Okay. So the premise of the first sale doctrine is once you buy some kind of physical material, you don't have the right to make a copy of it or to distribute copies, but you do have a bunch of rights to kind of do what you want with it, including resell it or lend, lease, loan it as much as you want. And so like, even though copyright owners are like, no, you shouldn't be able to do this. Everyone should buy an individual copy of the library book. The library is like, no, man, we buy the book, and as long as we want to keep giving it away or giving it for a time and bringing it back, we can do that indefinitely. So you can have one book that 200 people read consecutively without violating any law, as long as you're not making a copy of it. It's the first sale doctrine, and it's the basic, like the legal linchpin upon which libraries rest. And there's all sorts of jerks and people that would love to destroy it and get rid of it. And for digital media, they do. There's no first sale doctrine for your MP3s. You don't really own them in the same way. But it does exist for like physical media and for books and stuff.
Do you know how that applies to, like for instance, I've downloaded numerous like library apps on my phone. But right now I'm reading a book and listening to a book on an app on my phone from my library.
Yes. So in each of those cases, it's different law than the law that governs books. So the library has to buy a set number of licenses for the book. It's more expensive for the library to provide ebooks generally than it is to buy the print books. And so that's why you can only have it for 21 days and then it's set to expire, because they're literally not allowed to make a copy for you. It's illegal. You're only leasing a copy. And the same thing is true, actually, for many people when you buy music from the iTunes store. You think you're owning it, but you're not. If Apple decided they wanted to wipe you, they could totally wipe it.
Well, that's the worst.
It's totally the worst. But the libraries are the best.
They are the best. I've always loved the library. I don't buy a lot of books because I get them from the library. People always ask, because I love to read. People ask me, well, where'd you get that book? What do you mean, where did I get it? Like, I got it from the library. I can't afford to buy a new book every 2 weeks. I don't have that kind of money.
But the freaking library does.
Society does.
Yeah.
Now that I have kids, taking my kids to the library, that's something I do once a week, and I love it. It's, to them, it's like almost a magical wonderland. They go and they pick the books and they pick a video they want and they just get to explore and see it.
And the thing is, the more you use the library, the better it gets. And that's like, it's awesome. I can't talk enough about how great the library is, Dave. A totally worthy selection for the library, for the Hall of Fame. Off the Chain Hall of Fame, Public Library.
We salute you, Public Library and librarians. I thank you. I've learned so much. And no one has ever made fun of me for checking out a ridiculous fantasy book at the library. Doesn't happen.
All right, Dave. Here's one tiny other piece of tidbit that you want to know.
Have you
ever heard of what's called a Carnegie Library? So, Andrew Carnegie. Heard of this guy?
Yes. Yes.
Total scumbag. Basically, not a total scumbag, but he's the steel industry, one of the richest people of all time, a big steel baron. He donated the money to build over 2,500 libraries in the United States between 1883 and 1920-something. And maybe they weren't all in the United States, but they were most of the English-speaking world. But I think, I don't know, like almost 1,700 libraries were built with Carnegie money between this period of time. Basically, the public library system that exists in the United States is largely the fruit of the philanthropic giving of Andrew Carnegie.
That's amazing. And it's well known that by doing so, he was able to purchase his way into heaven by doing that. Yeah. And very valid, very valid.
Well done, Andrew.
Way to go.
See you at the pearly gates, and thanks for the books.
So, Steele, we got a couple of our favorite segments coming up. First, small talk.
Yeah.
We've done it many times just for people that may have forgot or need a reminder. This is a segment where we're giving you things to talk about. You may be in an uncomfortable social situation. You may be at lunch with coworkers. You don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you some things to talk about that make you seem more interesting than you actually are.
100%, Dave. Spring mixers are coming up. You're going to be in a situation where you need to be at your best socially. You need to be glib. You need to be smooth. You have something to talk about. What do you got for the people, Dave Jensen?
So, Steele, big, big advance in the medical community. Stem cells. We all know about stem cell research.
Uh-huh.
We're going to use it to cure all sorts of stuff. But we're finally getting to the point where it may be fighting.
It may be fighting what?
The ultimate disease.
Oh, really? HIV?
You're confused. Male pattern baldness.
Whoa, Dave. I didn't even think that was treatable. I thought that was terminal.
Usually the best option if you're going bald is just to give up on life. But you don't have to do that anymore.
Oh, man. Dave, I really should become a male nurse. I need to get in on the ground floor on all these innovations.
But it's a little bit silly. It seems kind of a waste of time to be doing this kind of research on stem cells. But it means a lot to some people. But, you know, the forefront of hair technology has mostly been hair transplants up to this point. But what these stem cell guys say is that's just kind of shuffling the problem around. Eventually, you're going to lose it. But they're doing some research and doing some techniques where they're taking fat from your abdomen and somehow getting the stem cells from that and essentially injecting that into your scalp.
Hey, and you know, they say that our current president is anti-science, but I know for a fact he's deeply interested in the results of this research. He's directed the NIH to pursue it aggressively.
It's one of his first executive orders. He did the immigration thing, then he's like, stem cells for hair, done.
Take those fatty abdomens and turn it into luscious hair. I love it, man. Well, Dave, I want to tell you about something that's been really changing my life. I need to put out a plug for this. All of our listeners who like Off the Chain will love Folktopia.
Oh, I'm intrigued. I'm already intrigued.
I work with an amazing guy. He's like the Jordan Fox of Wisconsin, Dave.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He's half Filipino.
Excellent.
He's from a really artsy, interesting small town. And he has an MFA in film. He's a filmmaker. And just an incredible, like a funny, quirky storyteller. My coworker, I love the guy, David Mackesite. He has a YouTube channel now called Folktopia. And they're basically backyard and maker projects. These short videos of him just making stuff. Fixing things, burning things. He built his own like earthen stove that gets up to 800 degrees and he burns and cooks stuff in it. He fixes machines. He fixes all kinds of stuff. And Folktopia at YouTube is the YouTube channel. You got to check it out. You got something to talk about. He repaired a drum. He's made some copper armor for this drum. I mean, he just makes stuff. It's kind of a cross between Jordan and all of Jordan's favorite YouTube channels. But it's a guy that I know that makes them, and they're really good. And I think if we play our cards right, we could get him to come on the show soon and tell us more about Folktopia in person.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. Yeah, making and fixing things isn't something I can personally do, but I'm interested in watching someone else do it.
Their videos are like a minute to 2 minutes long. They're well made. They're beautiful. He speeds them up. They're fun. And they're like, I have another coworker who has insomnia, and she says they're the perfect cure for insomnia. So there you go.
High praise. High praise indeed. Steel, I got one more small talk subject for you.
Please talk to me small.
So let's say you're going to build a robot.
I'm going to. Let's say I have built a robot.
What are you going to build? What do you want your robot to look like? What do you want from your robot? What do you need from your robot?
So for me, I think the idea of robot aesthetics is you want that classic blend of strength, beauty, I would say even grace, if you can. Like, you want it to be graceful, but you also want it to communicate power and sexual allure. You really want human beings to be confused and uncomfortably attracted to your robot.
I think that we all know the cutting edge of robot technology. We've seen it in science fiction films. We know it. We want heavily sexualized robots.
Yeah, like that Bjork music video.
Yeah, Bjork understands everything. But there's actually a man in China. Ever since he was small, he just had this interest in robotics, and he wanted to build a robot. And legally, he can't tell you what this robot, who it's supposed to look like. But if you click on the link, you're probably going to know who this robot is. Any guesses, Steel?
Wow. It looks like a ScarJo. Is that the correct acronym for her name?
I believe so. Okay. Are we still using acronyms for celebrity names?
I don't even know if it's an acronym. Dave, you're asking the wrong guy.
So it looks, he built this robot. He doesn't know anything about robotics. It's not his profession. But he just kind of homemade built this robot, which I think is kind of interesting thing. But to make it uncomfortable for everyone, he made it, the robot look exactly like Scarlett Johansson.
Nice.
And then I guess he publicized that he did this. Another very uncomfortable thing. I think building robots is interesting, but if you're going to build a Scarlett Johansson lookalike robot, like, just keep it in your closet.
That guy's from Hong Kong, Dave, and the robot is called Mark One. That's what his name is. I don't understand that name. So yeah, we got ScarJo robots, we got Folktopia, and we've got belly fat stem cells that can fight male pattern baldness. If you fail at your spring mixer, it's nobody's fault but your own.
You bring these up on your next speed dating round, like, boom, you're in.
Yeah, you'll be looking to buy a white van to hold your six kids one of these days.
Everyday heroes, Steel.
Dave, this is one of my favorite segments. It's a chance for us to talk about, like, not the people who grab the headlines, not the big names, the big egos, but the people out there in the world that are making the world better by being just excellent people.
I love it. Hey, you're the one. You wanted this segment in.
I did.
You came across the guy that you wanted to highlight. Let's hear about him.
You know about Bike Batman, Dave?
No, but it sounds awesome.
So I was reading OutsideOnline.com, and they had this long-form piece about bike thieves in a way. And I was like, man, this is kind of a bummer. More and more people are riding bikes, especially in cities. The bikes are sometimes fancy, $2,000 to $3,000. You get a bike instead of a car. You bike everywhere. You rely on it. It's healthy. It's good for the earth, all this stuff. But bikes are also really hard to track. They're much easier to steal than cars. They're mobile. You steal it and you drive it off. And so they've been a target for thieves. They're hard for police to catch and recover. And so there's been an outbreak of bike thievery from people who often want to fence them and sell them, and sometimes use them for drug money. And so,
is this happening even in Gotham City?
Even in Gotham City. And
okay,
it's stunning. You know, you'd have bigger fish to fry with Two-Face and the Penguin and everything. But so there is a gentleman in Seattle who didn't give his name, but he goes by the name of Bike Batman. One day he's online looking for a bike, and he sees like this all steel bike that's really, he's been looking for it for a while, and it's for sale for less than $600. And he knows it's like a real expensive bike, so he's like, chances are either the person doesn't know what they've got, which is really unlikely, where they're trying to sell a stolen bike. And that really kind of ticked him off. And he's like, how can I find out who this bike belongs to if it's stolen? There's also a website that registers all, that people can register their bikes on. So he's scouring that website and he sees that this bike was registered, or he finds it in a classified ad, someone's looking for their stolen, missing bike. So he matches the two things up and he arranges to meet the sellers of this bike.
Nice.
He shows up, pretends to be interested. He sees the bike and he says, oh, actually guys, he's just playing it cool, just mild mannered. And he says, actually guys, this is my girlfriend's bike. It was stolen. The way I see it, you've got two choices. Either you can give this bike to me now and just leave, or we can call the cops and let them sort it out. When he mentions the cops, there's three guys that show up in this alley. Two of them take off, and the one guy's like, here's the bike, yeah. And then he gives him the bike, and he takes the bike and returns it to the owner. And the owner's like, oh, thank you, found my bike. And he said he felt like a hero, like a superhero. He just played it real chill. He kept it cool. He's pretty nondescript about it. He loved it, and it became an obsession. He's now done this more than 24 times. Same routine. He's got the police involved a couple times where they'll be nearby in case something goes wrong. And the police love it because they love helping to recover these stolen bikes. And there's probably like a half dozen other people in other major American cities that follow similar techniques that help people find stolen bikes and then recover them without hurting anybody, without getting anybody arrested, without like just recovering bikes for people, making their lives better.
Yeah, this seems about like the most, I don't know about benign, is if that's a proper term, but just the most just cool, easygoing way to go about doing it too.
It's
chill. He's chill.
Yeah, I'm going to be direct with you. This isn't your bike. You stole it. It's the wrong thing to do. No judgment. I just want the bike back.
And is he actually dressed as Batman when he does this?
No. No, I think it's just a name.
Okay, that's unfortunate. That might upset the balance of the whole situation, though, if he was dressed as Batman.
Yeah. The best part of the description is the woman who's, I think it's the woman who's writing this article. She says, you know, you've met this, in meeting this guy, the thing that strikes me the most about him is how unremarkable he is. To the near stranger, he is beige, nearly without affect. Almost boring. Inflection is not one of his gifts. So you can just picture this guy. He's the everyman. He's the tax accountant you go to church with. And yet he's bike Batman. It's perfect. Mild mannered.
That's exactly what you want to project though if you're bike Batman. You don't want people looking at you twice.
Totally.
So Steele, you know I moved recently.
Yeah.
Stressful thing to do. Totally. As the kids pile up, so do the possessions. Mm. Just loads of stuff. So we got a U-Haul truck. I got the biggest one that they had, and I didn't think it was going to be big enough.
Yeah, you were sweating it. I could tell.
Yeah, I was super nervous. Like it was about 2/3 of the way full. I felt like I'm going to have to get another truck, a trailer. I have got some real problems here. And I'm working. I don't have time for this. This is bad news. Things are not going well. But that's when my friend stepped up. A friend by the name of Scott Mills.
Wow. Scott, you're an everyday hero to me.
He was in the truck most of the time. You know, I was directing kind of the unloading of the house. We're carrying stuff. I'm taking apart furniture.
Well, he was the truck Tetris guy?
He was the truck Tetris guy.
That is a very important person and a needed skill for every move.
This guy, amazing. You know, he was doing a great job the first 2/3 of the truck. Like, we weren't wasting space, but the last third, I was nervous. Like, I thought we still had at least half my possessions out there. And Scott's just like, don't worry about it. And he just starts doing his Tetris thing. If something's not working, he didn't mind pulling it back out, putting it back on the driveway and getting going again. And he was just seeing things that nobody else was. And by the time Scott was done, the only thing I had to leave in my garage was like a dumpy rocking chair, and I'll pick it up. I think I'm going to pick it up this weekend. It was amazing. You couldn't have done a better thing for me that day than what he did.
Yeah. Scott Mills, I am impressed. Thank you. And you are an everyday hero. That's awesome. You know, one thing I miss about us, we don't have a dishwasher. I mean, these hands are our dishwasher, but, I miss not having a dishwasher because every time I did the dishes, I thought of it as practice for a move. I'm like, oh, packing the dishwasher is in my mind like a warm up for moving truck Tetris. Do you love moving or helping people move? For me, it's like in my blood. I think it's Mormon genetics. I tell people this all the time. I'm like, oh, you're moving? Can I help? When are you going to move? And people are like, what the hell's wrong with you? But I actually like it. I've been to probably 200 moves in my life.
I think it's a great skill to have. And as Mormons, I've helped lots of moves and it's awesome.
It's like, so good.
I don't know how you move. I guess you pay guys to do it.
Yeah. Sometimes like whenever my friends move, it's like a panic big deal. And I'm like, why don't you just recruit a bunch of us? And they're like, I don't know how. I'm like, all right, I'll show up. I'll get five or six people. And I just do it the old Mormon way with non-Mormons. It's the best. You just buy them pizza at the end, and for non-Mormons, you get them beer or whatever, but it's not that hard. You just get five willing people, and it's done in an hour for most people that I know. Well, if you get like eight kids or whatever, then it's going to take a couple hours.
Or it could take like 3 hours if you have tons of stuff. But on the other end, Steele, there was like 20 Mormons at my house. We were unloaded in 30 minutes.
That's,
it was amazing.
Isn't it amazing? When you have a bunch of people, moving isn't a big deal at all. I don't ever sweat it. I'm just like, get a bunch of people and it's going to be easy.
When you help move, you're a hero. Like, it's awesome.
It's so fun.
Because it's such a stressful time for those people. Whoever's moving, it's so hard. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep.
Steele, it's time to move on to one of our favorite segments, Unchained Melodies. This week, you're the one that's in charge of what we're doing. What's going on here?
Dave, I have been thinking about this for a couple months. I've been missing you. I've been missing music. I've been missing talking music with you. And so I thought, you know, in the last few weeks, I've been listening to music, and I listen for myself, but a big part of me listens to music for you, Dave. I'm listening vicariously. And I've always got my ear out thinking, will Dave like this? I want to present Dave with some good music. So tonight, it's just since it's Valentine's week, I thought, let's play music for each other. Let's play music we think the other will like. I want to please your eardrums.
So romantic, Steele.
I want to please your eardrums.
I'm sure you will. I'm excited.
Okay. So I got the first song for you, Dave. And you know, I know you like Three Name Singers. It's like,
Do
you know the old William Elliott Whitmire?
I don't, but I already like him.
It's good in a way. So he wrote this song, and Esme Patterson is this young female songwriter. She wrote a bunch of songs, and then they made a little single where they're recording each other's songs.
This
is Esme Patterson's cover of William Elliott Whitmire's Not Feeling Any Pain.
That's nice. We actually saw her open for somebody a few years ago, and she was an adorable girl with a great voice. I haven't heard this song before, but yeah, I like her.
Cool. I had no idea. I've never seen her live. She's in her early 20s, right? I think she's real young.
Yeah, yeah, she was a young lady, and we enjoyed her. We enjoyed it.
Terrific. All right, Dave. I've purposely not listened to any of the songs that you're playing for me tonight, so I'm really excited.
So, Steele, I just came across this one the other week, but Graham Parker and The Rumour, been around for years. He's English, so I know that you love English people.
Very much.
And I think the song's from the 70s, and it just hit me in the right spot. I thought you might enjoy it. Okay. Watch the Moon Come Down.
In this dirty town, there's nothing going for me. No shows going down that I would wanna see. Nothing but the midnight train. In this shady street, on a top floor flat, women take their sheep down to the laundromat. As the night falls on this town, I'm going to watch the
I like that. You know what I like about that song most, Dave? It feels like that lead singer, he's got personality. There's like snarl, but he's like suppressing it for that song. He's like playing it sweet in that song. And he just, it doesn't feel saccharine. He's got a personality, but he's just kind of, He's doing a sweet song for you, but you know deep down he's gritty, right?
And there's just some really funny rhymes that are just like really in your face. Hey, these two words rhyme. It's just funny.
I don't know anything about Graham Parker. Is he still living?
Yeah, he is. He and The Rumour made a new album pretty recently, but I think he was primarily around in the 70s, and that's when this song was done, and it just keeps going. It gets cooking a little more, and I like him.
It's got a kind of Joe Jackson, Elvis Costello kind of feel to it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like it. Okay. All right, Dave. There's a band from Columbus, Ohio that feels like a band you would have listened to in college nonstop.
Oh, yeah, then I'm in.
They only were formed 10 years ago, though, so they were like next generation for us. Do you know this group, Saint Seneca?
I don't think I do. Okay. I don't think I know them.
From Ohio State. They were like an Ohio State college band. And this is a song called All the Best from the album The Mall Walker, which I think you'd like.
It hit all my sweet spots. A singer that you're not sure if there's a melody. His voice really isn't singing. It's a little bit off. You're not sure if they're keeping a rhythm. It's everything I love.
Very literate, kind of obscure lyrics. I think you had a smile on your face while you were listening to that, Dave, that made me think of Teenage Dave a little bit. And I just, it made my Valentine's week complete. I'm so glad I could do that for you.
So Steele, I got one for you. Yes. This song, I really love. Are you familiar with the band The Walkmen?
Yes, I am. So I know the name of both of these musicians, and I played one of those Rostam songs a while back that I really, really loved.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm excited for this kind of pairing. I don't know the first thing about what it's going to sound like, but I can just guess.
They did an album together, which actually I've listened to it a lot. It's now one of my favorite from last year. So it's Hamilton, Lighthouser, and Rostam. And this is just a really nice, beautiful song, In a Blackout.
Okay. That was not at all what I was expecting. I think that finger-picking kind of Western understated guitar and his soaring vocals, he can just – he's such a suspenseful singer.
His vocals on this album, I haven't listened to The Walkmen that much, but are just super impressive to me because I love them. The melodies of the songs are great, and like I want to sing along with them, and I can't. Because his vocals are just too good.
Yeah, yeah. I listened to his solo record that came out a couple of years ago, like several times, and liked it a lot. But it was a little too high energy at times for me. And this feels like, I love the instrumentation behind that little kind of choir that's coming in the back. I'm guessing that's Rostam's
yeah,
touch.
Yeah.
I think that's a good, I like it the way he's toning it down a bit.
It's an interesting combination. I think it's great. So I hope you liked it.
I did. Thanks, Dave. I'm going to check out that record. Okay. My last recommendation for you. I don't know if you know this band already. Dr. Dog.
I'm very familiar. Still.
Yes. Okay. I figured you might be. Do you know the song Casual Free Fall from the record Abandoned Mansion? All right.
No.
Then here's a gift for you.
Bye.
I can just picture the scene, Dave. Ariane's got the recorder. You're there with the guitar. And this is the kid's lullaby music, you know, one of these nights. And it just melted my heart.
I really like that song. I thought it was great. Dr. Dog. But yeah, it was a decade ago. I was living in D.C. I was in law school, only in name, apparently, because it didn't last long. But I was going to concerts just all the time.
930 Club,
Black Cat. Like all the time I was going to concerts. And Dr. Dog kept opening for like every band I was seeing. The first time I was like, these guys suck. Dr. Dog, that's like the worst name.
It really is the worst name.
And then by the third time I saw him within like a month, just because they just kept, I was like, wait, you know, I'm in. Dr. Dog, it just took me a lot of times. I'm in, guys. Thanks.
Dr. Dog is an acquired taste for you, huh?
But I'm on board with that one.
Yeah.
So this last guy, Steele.
I know the singer. Oh man, Dave, you totally got me pegged. This voice is like one of my like creepy, weird favorite voices.
He's got kind of this is kind of wiener music.
Oh,
this is just him. I think it's just him with a piano. It's beautiful. It's Keaton Henson. All right.
Have you seen his face, Dave, or any of his videos?
I don't know what this guy looks like.
Google him while you're listening to this song. He's exactly what you imagine he's going to look like. Have you seen the turtleneck picture?
It couldn't match better. Yeah, it's wonderful.
I like it in spite of myself. I like my conscious mind is telling me, oh, that's so precious. But I'm like, oh yeah, I still quaver, you know, I'm like, it's, if you want to make your daughters cry, play the Small Hands video for them. It's like heartbreaking, Dave. There's like these little woodland animal puppets and it's just like the saddest story, but it's very sweet.
You know I love to make my children cry, so I'm in.
It's this puppet, beautiful, sad puppet song, movie. It's good. Man, Dave, I think we both hit it out of the park on that one.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think we're 6 for 6. Yeah. That's a first. We've never played 6 good songs, ever.
No. Well, I mean, if we do a podcast every 3 months, we might be able to have good songs.
Well, Steele, it's time to say goodnight, and you know how we say goodnight.
Yeah.
It's with book wisdom.
All right, Dave, I'm excited about this one. So I work at a university, and one of my favorite parts of my job, I'm working with professors all the time, and I'll help them with technology, and then I always say, hey, what's the best thing you've read in the last year? You read anything interesting lately? And I'm always asking for book recommendations. It's surprising how many professors who read books for a living are like, no, I don't have anything. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? But, so there's this couple who teaches French here. They're Polish, and she's this energetic battle axe of a woman. She's awesome. Ewa Mirnowska. And I said, hey, recommend a book for me. And she recommended a book, and then the next day she came into my office. She said, no, never mind, never mind. Read this instead. She slaps it down on my desk.
Oh, boy.
It's got a picture of a woman's legs in tights on the cover, and it's called The Erotic Potential of My Wife.
Is it an instruction manual?
What are you giving me, and what are you trying to say here, Ava? I was like, I don't need to read this. I already know all about the topic. Come on. And so I start reading the book. It was hilarious. It's the satirical kind of romance novel in a way. There's a guy in the book, his name is Hector, and he has a mania for collection. He's addicted to collecting things. And so he's at a competition, and I'm going to read the passage here. At these events, collectors fight about rare stamps and coins in an atmosphere that's as festive as it is dusty. Hector had registered in the badges category, a surprisingly popular category that year due to the upsurge of pin amateurs, purists, stuck by the badge. One had to have nerve to reach the quarterfinals. Hector didn't show any sign of nerves. He knew he was superior, and in a rosy corner of his memory, he relived the moment of the Nixon discovery. He was walking, hands in front like Antana, with a fever in his step. The collector is a sick person, permanently seeking a cure. For 2 days he drifted, desperately seeking a badge. It had already been 6 months since he had obsessed on badges, 6 months of wild passion, 6 months where his life had been nothing but badges. One should always beware of Swedes who are not blonde. Hector was impassive. At any moment he could whip out the Nixon is the best badge in front of the Swede's luminous eyes, eyes that were reminiscent of the suicide rate in Sweden. Even if his name was impossible to remember, his sublime performance the previous year was impossible to forget, because Mr. was the reigning champion of electoral campaign badges. In his civilian life, the Swede was a pharmacist in Sweden. It was said that he had inherited this profession. A collector's professional life often fits like an oversized suit. As for their sex life, it is as calm as a dunce during school holidays. Collecting is one of the rare activities that doesn't rely on seduction. Our accumulated objects are barriers like a horse's blinkers. Only flies can see the cold sadness that emanates from their eyes, the sadness that is forgotten during the euphoria of a competition. And then he ends up losing to a Beatles badge from the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The Swede beats him because it was just an ordinary band. It was the badge that was a special issue of like a fan club or something. And Hector feels broken and cheated. But it's just, it's ridiculous. The book is absurd and hilarious. And I, Dan Manowski gave me a moment of joy in a very bleak winter.
That's so happy. It's hard, I think, to find legitimate humor in books. Most authors, that's not something they're striving for. And the ones that do, lots of times it comes off kind of hackneyed and not clever. So when it's a legitimate, funny, interesting book, I love it.
Yeah. So the reason why the passage stuck out to me, though, was we were making fun of collectors and trying to understand why people collect things. And then the next month I read this book. It was like, perfect time. Says, what's the line again? I got to pull this line out because I think it's great. The collector is a sick person permanently seeking a cure. Yeah.
And as I look over to this bookshelf I have of just hundreds of children's books that we now have, and I'm the driving force behind it because it's like my favorite ones. We have them all now. I can't stop.
Dave, I hate to admit this, but I was this close to buying you a very important Christmas present, but I thought I might bankrupt you. The American Library Association publishes this magazine called Choice. Do you know this?
Uh-uh.
It's like 100 pages a month that just literally just reviews children's books. It's like, it's awesome. It's very expensive, but it's really cool. Only libraries subscribe to it, but I thought of buying you a personal subscription for it so you'd get reviews of all the best, coolest children's books. But I thought that would probably be a bad gift rather than a good gift.
We'd just go to the library and get more stuff.
Mm. Okay. And next time you're there, check out Choice Magazine.
Okay. Steele, it was great to talk to you again. I enjoyed the music, the library discussions, and I'm going to try and connect with some people over small talk this week. I'm going to do it.
That's good. And as I think about it, it might not be called Choice, but I'll figure it out and I'll get you the right title.
Okay. Off the chain. It's off the chain.
Steele, you look like you're in your mid-30s now. You're always wearing Wisconsin gear of some sort.
These are my pajamas, Dave.
Always repping. What is it? What do they call it for short? Is it the W, or do we have like a slang term for the university?
So the Badgers, I don't know. I guess the UW, we're at the UW. The people who go to school here were Sconnies. There's Coasties, and then there's Sconnies.
Wait, who are the Coasties?
Coasties are people from like the east or west coast that come to school here.
Okay.